And this is The Source on KSTX, a product of the Texas Public Radio Newsroom. I'm David Martin Davies. Today, when you sample the news about San Antonio's gangs, there are connections to drug cartels and drive-by shootings and the blood-in, blood-out lifestyle. Turn back the clock 50 years or so, and it was different. The local Latino gangs weren't so blood-soaked. They were part of a simpler time in a much smaller city. But it's part of San Antonio's unrecorded history until now. Mike Tapia is recording the oral histories of gang members of San Antonio, the old gangs, and now these members are in their golden years. He's a professor of criminology at UTSA. Welcome to The Source, Mike.
Thanks.
And we invite you to join the conversation if you've got some stories about the old gangs of San Antonio and how they would roam the streets. Give us a call, 614-8980, 614-8980. You could also email your questions and comments to thesource@tpr.org. So, Professor Tapia, why record the gang stories of San Antonio? Were these lawless bands of people that would ne'er-do-wells, that would occupy the streets and cause nothing but trouble?
Well, that certainly is the narrative you hear. And, you know, I guess for most of San Antonio, you know, you tend to think of, you know, have that imagery, right? And so there is some truth to that for sure, right? But, you know, there are a lot of untold stories there. You know, gangs kind of mesh with the community in so many ways that we don't really, you know, consider. And they really just are, you know, part of the fabric of, you know, many parts of San Antonio and, you know, just any urban, you know, setting. So that's kind of the, you know, the whole premise for why I set out on, in this direction.
So you're able to track down and record conversations with men and women, I imagine, who were in the gangs back in the day. And they've, do they look back fondly, you know, romanticizing their escapades?
Sure. You have some of that. There's still the bravado, you know, claims and a lot of that stuff lives on. But, you know, you'd be surprised. Some accounts are refreshingly humble, you know, looking back. It's actually one of the interview questions that I ask is, you know, basically what you said, looking back, you know, what do you feel about having been a gang member? How do you reflect on that? And, you know, sometimes the responses are like, I, you know, it was no big deal for, you know, kind of the legendary status that some of these groups have today. You know, it doesn't really seem like that big of a deal to some of these guys. It was just their lifestyle. Right?
Now, were these gangs, just like a bunch of guys that would hang out together on the weekends and stuff, or were they really a criminal enterprise or a syndicate that had a lot of enforcement to it?
True. I mean, the 1950s era gangs weren't, you know, as sophisticated organization-wise as, you know, some of the gangs we have today, right? Especially prison gangs and kind of like street-to-prison hybrids. No, they more typify kind of just the street corner play group, right? You know, a bunch of unsupervised, you know, youth in their adolescent years who really just needed to pass the time and, you know, would inevitably get into mischief and stuff like that. But yeah, that doesn't mean that there weren't, you know, bouts of violence involved and pretty heavy duty conflicts between the neighborhoods. So
in, as a professor of criminology, what kind of lens does that provide you as you look back on these gangs? And is gang, I mean, I get hung up on the word because, you know, the gangs that we have today seem like they are connected to drug cartels and they are part of a larger criminal enterprise and they are very violent. And it does, you know, maybe I'm just looking back, you know, and through the prism of time and don't see these guys as that severe and that much out of step with mainstream society.
Yeah. I mean, it's not strictly a criminological perspective. You know, it's a sociological one as well. What is the meaning of the word gang, right? And I in my writings, especially on, you know, things related to this project, I tend to, you know, I'll literally put gangs in quotes, you know, because you're right. It doesn't seem to have the same level of intensity, you know, of, and again, you know, criminal organization, hierarchy, you know, things like that. A lot of that stuff was missing, right? you know, the youth were, they didn't graduate, you know, into prison gangs the way they do today. They'd usually age out. So, you know, in a criminological perspective, I mean, that's one of the kind of like principles or tenets, you know, of a criminal career, you know, how much stuff that folks will engage in over the lifetime. Most folks just grow out, you know, because they get a girlfriend, they get a job, you know, they grow
up. They join the military.
Right.
And they move on in their life and get responsible. And
yeah, and that's a pretty common, you know, way out of the barrio that we hear, you know, in these narratives.
But it does seem there are some consistencies, you know, of having these old family-like structures outside of the family, where young men would bond together, and so evidently it is providing some sort of role necessary, or else why is it continuing to regenerate itself generation after generation?
Oh, no doubt. And that actually is, you know, kind of the impetus for the work, is to, you know, compare structures, reasons for you know, kind of like the organizational structure of the gang, the reasons for joining, you know, maybe the external conditions, kind of the environment that they grew up in, the role of poverty, for example. You know, yeah, there are some things that are pretty persistent, or so it seems, you know, in terms of like what causes, you know, boys to go, you know, down this road, right? And I do mean boys. I mean, you know, so far, I mean, sure, the women have a role, play certain roles in gangs, gangs of any race, right? But, you know, in the Chicano gang world, you know, they pretty much take, I guess, like secondary roles and, you know, stuff like that. So it's mostly the males that we're focused on. But the girls are, you know, notes about the girls and anyone we can find, you know, we would talk to get their perspective as well.
So, but the gangs, they're adversaries of the police. You know, the cat and mouse games with the police, I imagine. That was there.
Sure, that was pretty much there from the start, and that remains so today. You know, you don't have quite the level of intelligence, and so as you know, gangs have evolved, so have police and their methods for, you know, just suppressing their activities and stuff. So yeah, it all has evolved together, but you're right. There are some real fundamental, you know, things that don't seem to change over time.
And so looking at the gangs as they existed back in the 50s and 60s, and the men that you interview now, is there information that we can get from them to help us figure out what drives the gangs as today?
Oh, I think so. Yeah. And that's actually one of the conditions that many of the interviewees will place on me, you know, before they agree to participate in the study, is that they say, I just want to make sure that you're going to, you know, use this, that your study will yield, you know, some valuable insights for being able to crack that nut, you know, to say, why is this seemingly a persistent feature of Mexican-American communities?
All right, we're talking with Professor Mike Tapia. He is a UTSA professor of criminology about the gangs of San Antonio. If you've got a story to tell, we want to hear it. We'll be right back.
Like, we would see a guy from the ghost town. We had problem with the ghost town. Yeah. We would see the guy in the ghost town with his downtown or something. He was with his father. We wouldn't touch him, man. We would respect him, or with his mother. Like, how much, maybe we threw the finger at him or stuff like that, and he would go close to his body. We wouldn't do nothing to him. But when we catch him alone, we would beat the shit out of him, right? Pero cuando respetamos a los mayores, and then everywhere.
That is a sample of an oral history recorded by Professor Mike Tapia. He is collecting the histories of old gang members of San Antonio. They're now in their golden years, but they remember what it was like when they ran the streets of San Antonio. We'd like to hear from you if you've got a story of growing up in the streets of San Antonio and living the gang lifestyle. The number is 614-8980, 614-8980. You could also email us your questions and comments to thesource@tpr.org. So, Professor Tapia, who were we hearing from right there? What was he telling us?
Well, in that clip, I'd asked the interviewee to kind of expound on, like, compare what the norms of the gangs were like in his era, you know, early, mid-50s to today, right? And that's a topic we, you know, talk about quite a bit in this study. And there he was talking about, you know, the matter of respect, respecting one's elders, kind of like the public demeanor of the gang member, right? And of course, you know, the common, you know, refrain you hear is that respect has been lost over time. You know, street kids don't abide by, you know, some of those principles of respecting elders. Like that clip went on to say, a guy, you know, if we saw a kid in public with his parents, we'd leave him alone. We might shoot him the finger, you know, we might, you know, be just, but
harass him a little bit.
Yeah, but we wouldn't, you know, like physically, you know, assault him or anything. We caught him alone, it's a different, or with his buddies, it's a different story. But, you know, so those things have been lost. And then, of course, it goes on to talk about like drive-bys and stuff, you know, just how that grew so common in the 80s, 90s. And it's just a far cry from how these guys operated, you know.
Let's go to the phones. Joe wants to join the conversation. Joe, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
How you doing, Dave?
Doing great, buddy.
Listen, I grew up in that era, and it wasn't, you know, I've not heard you mention the turf, because that's what it was about, the turf here in San Antonio. You had the Circle 81 gang out there by what is now the where the Sass Shoe Factory is. You had neighborhoods like La Tripa and the Ghost Town and all this, and it was all about turf and nothing else. You could not go through a certain area, because there was the possibility that you would be confronted by the people that ran that. And I had not heard you mention that. Did you cover that in your book?
Okay. Joe, thank you for that question. A very good question. I appreciate you calling in with that. So talk about turf and the importance of that.
Yeah, thanks for the question, Joe. Well, first of all, there's no book yet, right? This is, we're really early in the stages, in the research stages. But no, what you say is completely true, Joe. You know, turf was, and that's really the kind of the model for almost all southwestern cities for Chicano gangs, you know, whether you're talking El Paso, Dallas, Houston, even East LA, you know, it really is fundamentally, at least in that era, you know, based on turf. I'm, you know, also, I do a lot of work with juvenile, you know, gangs. I study them. I interview, you know, Chicano gang members of all ages pretty much. And I ask about turf and I investigate that to see if that's still, you know, salient. And you'd be surprised that it actually still, you could still find, you know, remnants of that, less so today. But, you know, that's kind of one, you know, enduring feature also of Chicano gangs over the decades.
So what are some of the names of the gangs that are, that people remember today?
Oh, he hit on, you know, some of the bigger ones. But there, you know, a lot of folks make so much about the West Side. And it's true, you know, and you have to afford the West Side its respect, you know, in this regard. But my project, I think, is unique in that it's exploring all the Barrio gangs citywide in the 50s. And there are gangs in what, you know, what's now the near North Side, you know, but Kenwood, you know, is one that has, you know, over by Kenwood Park. You know, almost, believe it or not, the pharmacy, there was a group associated with the pharmacy that was rivals with Kenwood, you know, because they were in an adjoining neighborhood. You have far south side, Barrio Gray Eagle, VGEs, and that gang is actually still around today. So that's a maybe 3-4 generation, you know, gang and running. So, yeah, those are that's kind of what's a bit different about this project, is that we're trying to explore kind of the forgotten barrios citywide, right?
So you work with modern-day gangs. You're also researching older gangs. And what are some of the common denominators that run through them? We're talking about turf and these names that sound very menacing. They do want to be tough. They do all want to have respect, call for respect to them, and but why go to a gang? What's the draw?
Yeah, I mean, and that really is the golden question. I mean, we've been studying gangs. I mean, like social science, you know, goes back, you know, to the 20s, to the teens even. You can find some publications. And that is kind of the mystery, you know, that still has yet to be fully unraveled, you know, is like, why does anyone join a gang? You know, what's the draw? You know, and there's things like, you know, there's five tenets, like the need for excitement, you know, things that have become
these anthropological meadisms that we have to have.
Right. It's kind of like a hierarchy of needs and, you know, the fun and excitement, meeting the opposite sex. So when you think about it that way,
opportunity to display one's physical prowess.
Right. And so theoretically, like some of the 1950s theories are that a lot of gang boys are misfits. You know, they don't do well in our mainstream institutions, public school, basically, you know, because supposedly the barrio, the ghetto has kind of a different set of cultural norms, and those families are not able to prepare their kids, you know, well enough for mainstream, you know, social life. And so the kids kind of reject mainstream cultural values, and then they form their own subcultural values. And so that's kind of, you know, some of the theoretical strains of why we think they form.
We're going to go back to the phones. If you want to join the conversation, the number is 614-8980, 614-8980. Rudy is on the line. Rudy, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hello, good afternoon. I appreciate the that this gentleman here is researching this topic. These roots go back three, four generations. I was speaking about Barrio Griego and the old South Sand where Dwight is at, ghost town, La Colonia. And it's just more of a I don't want to say family thing, but a lot of times people stayed in the neighborhood where they were born and grew up. I was raised up in the South Side in the 90s. And when we would speak to the old-time veteranos or the veterans, the old school guys from the neighborhood, they were already talking about the level of respect that was being lost. And a lot of that had to do with the coming out of Colors, that movie Colors. And it was just you saw a transitional phase in the late 80s to early 90s as the old school guys, the OGs, were stepping aside, getting married or getting old. So I was just wanted to say thanks. And it's very interesting how this topic resonates with San Antonio, especially with the old parts of San Antonio or San Anto, as we would call it back in the old days. And my question was, did you, the influx of people from California and the other southwestern states, did you notice I'm sure there was a different change in of the mentality and also the different levels of business, I don't know what you would call it, or different levels of gang activity as it changed to just being about turf or the barrio where you were from to making money.
All right, Rudy, thank you for your question. We appreciate your input. So, Professor Tapia.
Yeah, no, Rudy's take on it, where he originally started, that's right on. You know, it's a good analysis. So, Rudy, I mean, I was in college here at St. Mary's in the 90s, you know, just to give you a sense of, you know, my age. But I've pretty much been studying San Antonio gangs ever since, you know, even as a student, you know, St. Mary's is in the barrio. So, you know, if you venture out into the community, you can't help but, you know, recognize that it's got a rich, you know, gang, rich level of gang activity, right? Especially in that part of town. So it was, you know, when I was a social worker, actually, in the 90s out in the Indian Creek, Sky Harbor area, far southwest side. And it was there where I kind of started learning about, you know, this rich history, right? And I would meet, you know, grandparents and elders of the kids that I was working with, the gang kids I was working with. And so you started to hear, you know, all this urban lore and all these, you know, tales of, you know, gang adventures and stuff like that. And so that's allowed me to kind of, you know, think about these things across generations. I don't know that San Antonio has had that strong of an influence from California. You know, there's plenty of Texas, you know, gang tradition to, you know, to hold, go strong here. But yeah.
So let me ask you about the, we've heard that the Brown Berets, a group that was active during the 1960s, and they were kind of like security and enforcers during the civil rights era. They were from gangs, right?
Yeah. David Montejano is a scholar. He was at UT Austin for quite a while. He's at Berkeley now, sociology, and he's written a couple books about this. He's from San Antonio, and that's his take on it, you know, is that without the gangs and the barrios and them organizing, then there is no Chicano movement. And the Chicano movement, it was like kind of an aura of brotherhood. And so they would kind of drop the flag, the color, the barrio for a little while for the greater good, right, of advancing kind of, you know, the people's
will. Yeah, street credibility to it.
Definitely, exactly.
I'm going to try and get in one last caller. Ilda joining here. Ilda, thank you. Welcome to The Source.
Yes, hi.
Hello there.
I wanted to ask the professor if he ever considered a different kind of a gang. There's a whole bunch of us, probably thousands of us, who went on to the Catholic school gang. And we went on to, you know, get our high school degrees and university degrees and came back and got our jobs. And most of us raised families, became taxpayers, part of the silent majority. Anyway, we're also very much part of the West Side. We may not be Chicano as such, because we were very proud of our Mexicano ancestry, so we never shortened that name. And I was just wondering if, as part of this anthropology or sociological research, you would consider doing the other story.
All right, Ilda, let me give him a chance to answer that, because we're kind of running out of time. But thank you for that call. It was great points. Response?
Sure. I mean, that's a pretty common sentiment when people find out, you know, what topic interests you and what part of, you know, San Antonio's Hispanic, Latino culture that you're, you know, investigating, right? But I think the gang stuff has been overlooked. The things that Elda's talking about, you know, those kind of more mainstream societies and clubs and stuff like that. I mean, yeah, they've been written about quite a bit. You know, we know about their activities. They're, you know, they're pretty high profile. But the gangs kind of have always laid low and been kind of part of an underworld, right? So
here you are talking to these men who are in their golden years. They were in gangs, but they went on and they did go to Cali. They did become successful middle class, lower middle class, working class kind of guys, raised families, were taxpayers.
Yes, no doubt. Yeah, that's one of the narratives that is.
They didn't
really
go
common.
On to a whole lifetime of crime and disruption. You know.
Yeah, no, those are really rare, actually.
Okay, all right. Well, I want to thank you so much for coming and talking to us about your studies, Professor Mike Tapia, UTSA professor, recording oral histories about gang members of San Antonio. We're going to be right back talking about autism in the classroom. This is The Source on KSTX.